It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I don't know if you call this crystal balling or living in an alternative future, but let's pre-record our reaction to the NFL draft before the first round of the NFL draft. It is the Will Cain Show, which streams live every Monday through Thursday at 12 o'clock Eastern Time at foxnews.com, the Fox News YouTube channel, and the Fox News Facebook page. And as you know, it's always on demand at Apple or Spotify. If you're listening to us now, just go hit subscribe or leave a 5-star review or leave a comment if you would. And if you're watching us on YouTube, just hit subscribe and you'll get every episode of the Will Cain Show. NFL draft last night. Although this is being recorded on Thursday before the NFL draft. And I'm sorry, if you need to go, I will understand. But before you go, I'll let you know my mood today. It is very dependent upon what happened last night. These are the things that I want to see from the Dallas Cowboys. I've broken down every mock draft. I've played every mock draft simulator. The Cowboys have 3 picks in the first 3 rounds, 24, 56, 87. And before it is all said and done, I need these positions covered. Offensive tackle, offensive center, running back, defensive tackle, and linebacker. Will, you just named 5 positions. How are you going to do that with 3 draft picks? Exactly. So let's narrow it down on the ones where I need a starter. I need a starter at offensive tackle, offensive center, and running back. So here's what I would like to happen with the first round now behind us. You'll know today if I'm excited or I am disappointed. I think the tackle I have to get excited about is Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma. As we go into the weekend, the running back that I am excited about is Jonathan Brooks, running back from Texas. And the center, I'm much more open to. Zach Frazier, West Virginia, or wait until the 3rd, 4th round and get yourself the center from Wisconsin, the center from Penn State. I need these positions covered. The only other guy that I will get excited about, because I'm different than my guests today here on The Will Cain Show, I don't need sexy this year. I need big men. The only one I get excited about is defensive tackle from Texas, 380-pound Tavondre Sweat, the Longhorn, to stop the run for the Cowboys. And that wouldn't work for my guest today. My guest today is the host of The Carton Show. It's on FS1. It's from 7 to 9:30 every morning. Longtime, legendary broadcaster in New York City, now hosting a national show on FS1. I think Craig Carton is entertaining, he's fun, and he certainly knows a lot about sports. And we're going to break down what he's excited about or would be disappointed about for his New York Jets in the NFL draft last night. Plus, we get into a conversation about who's a Hall of Famer, Matt Ryan, Matt Stafford. Who's a Hall of Famer? And is he afraid of Dak Prescott? Plus a little NBA playoff talk with Craig Carton here now on The Will Cain Show.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
Craig Carton, the host of Carton Live on FS1, 7:30 to 9 a.m. every morning. Joining me now on The Will Cain Show. What's up? It's good to meet you, Craig. I've watched you for a long time.
I appreciate it. Likewise. We're actually on 7 to 9:30. So unless I got a memo that missed my mailbox, which would be fine. It's an hour less, but all good. And been watching you
I cut an hour off
for a long time as well.
I cut an hour off the show.
It's all good.
Thanks, man. I didn't mean to cut an hour off the show. But I'm glad to have you in the Fox family. I didn't get a message from management that your show has changed time slots. So we're good. We're good. All right. We're doing this together. We're sitting together on Thursday afternoon. And it's not ideal because I would love to be talking to you after the NFL draft. But you're a big New York guy. I think I have it correct. I think you're a Jets guy, if I remember correctly. So let's do it this way. I'm obviously a big fan of the Dallas Cowboys. When we wake up in the morning, what will you be most excited about? What will you be most disappointed about when it comes to the Jets?
Wow. I think the Jets are going to go after this kid from Georgia named Brock Bowers, who's kind of the prototypical NFL tight end now. And look, I'm like Pavlov's dog. Like if you hit the buzzer, woo, I'm going for it every time you hit the buzzer. So I like sexy, and sexy to me is not an offensive lineman. Sexy to me is a kid who can get down the field and catch the football. So I always want sexy. Now I'm not telling you that makes them a better team in comparison to getting an offensive lineman. And I think it's down to two guys. I think there's a kid out of Notre Dame named Joe Alt, who's this like 6'8" behemoth of a guy who would be a left tackle for the Jets to protect Aaron Rodgers, or you go sexy. And that's this kid, Brock Bowers, out of Georgia. Either way, I win, but I wake up much happier if we get the kid who can catch touchdowns and convert third downs. I don't fall in love with big, thick dudes on the offensive line.
That's a good, it's probably a good rule in life. I don't fall in love with big, thick dudes. I have to.
I have to
fall in love with big, thick dudes. I think. I have to fall in love with the offensive line. I think the Cowboys have to do that. I honestly will be disappointed if they don't do that. Draft a big offensive tackle because, I mean, they've been decimated. They've lost two starters in this offseason, a center and an offensive tackle. So if they don't come out with that from the pick number 24, I don't know what I would be excited about. You've got potential as well. I mean, the three rumors for the Jets are offensive tackle, much to your disappointment. The tight end, as you point out, who's not just prototypical. I mean, like, he's kind of a game changer. Everybody acts like he's a unicorn. Like, he's the type of tight end that doesn't come along as the best tight end every draft, but once every 5 years type situation. But, you know, you could also, I've seen a lot of people talking about receiver. So, you know, I don't know if one of the big receivers falls down, one of the big three receivers falls down to the Jets, but you'd be excited, right? I mean, if you got Rome Odunze from Washington, some receiver.
I don't think any of the big three are going to get down, assuming the Jets stay at number 10. Obviously, there's always that potential for a team, you know, to make a move if there's a guy that they really covet. But what I'm interested in you is you're a Cowboy fan, and there's this image a lot of people have that the Cowboys just win a lot, right? It's the Dallas Cowboys, you know, Troy Aikman, Michael Irvin, Emmitt Smith, win, win, win. It's been 28 years. You're only about, 32? Like, you've never seen the Dallas Cowboys in a Super Bowl. And this has been a terrible offseason for the Dallas Cowboys. You didn't sign any free agents. You lost three or four guys that were really good on the team. And your owner came out and said, and I love Jerry Jones. He's my favorite owner in the NFL. I wish he owned the New York Jets. But he just came out and said, the checkbook is closed. We're not spending any money. So you got bigger problems than who you're drafting towards the end of the first round.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. I mean, you buried some fake news in there, but it was complimentary fake news. No, I'm old enough. I'm 49. I was there for all three of those Super Bowls in the 90s. I went to them. And by the way, Carton, like, you know, I am a fan. I think you're really, really good at what you do. But your Cowboys hatred hasn't escaped my attention. Like, I know who I'm talking to. You've drugged them through the mud more than one occasion. So I'm just a forgiving soul. But, yeah, man, I mean, it's been forever. And I don't know that you would love the Jerry Jones tone, the New York Jets, because at some point, you know, you have to say, are you the hype machine, or do you deliver actual results on expectations? And I think there's a earned entitlement. I think it's earned. And so entitlement's not always a bad word. There's an earned entitlement to the Dallas Cowboys. They should be. You know, three Super Bowls in the 90s, but for the Steelers, the team of the 70s, arguably perhaps still a team of the 70s. And it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing, even more embarrassing because there is a wealth of talent on this roster. I don't think they're overhyped in terms of talent. So I kind of think it's a little bit of a rot, from the character of the team.
Not the Carolina Panthers, obviously. You know, there is talent there. As much as Dak is maligned, because that comes with the job, right? Being the Cowboy quarterback, doesn't matter what your name is, you're going to be maligned if you don't win a Super Bowl every single year. But, you know, I'm with you to a point. You've earned it to a point, but then there does come a point in time where if you're living off the ghosts of yesteryear, it's one thing if those ghosts were here 10 years ago. All right, it's maybe a half a generation, right, of fandom, but your ghosts are almost 30 years old. Like, at some point, you can't live off Roger Staubach anymore. You can't live off Troy Aikman. It does come a point where you're three decades in, and consider this. The Jets have more playoff wins than the Cowboys do in that time frame. That's not good. Trust me on that.
No, that's not good, because I was about to say, I'm not going to take this from a Jets fan. Like, I'm, I have a forgiving soul, but not only so much from a Jets fan. I mean,
fair enough.
You guys have become the laughing. You're not the laughing stock, but you're in the bottom five of, like, kick them while they're down. They're down a lot. Hey, the Cowboys, it's a weird thing. Like, for a stretch there, yeah, I had to live with, like, yeah, I'm not the Panthers, but I'm 8-8 under Jason Garrett. But now it's even more weird because, like, it's objectively good to be 12-5 three seasons in a row, right? Sure. But then losing the first round of the playoffs, not good.
Yeah, and that's the rub on it, right? You know, it's a long season. It's a grind. It's 4-plus months. And you have 12 wins three times under Mike McCarthy with Dak Prescott. And then there's that bugaboo for you guys, which is January football and the inability to get past that second round and even get to an NFC championship game. And ultimately, that's where legacies are born and made. Like, so you can be a great quarterback. You can be a Hall of Fame quarterback, all based on regular season success. And, you know, Dak Prescott's on his way to potentially being that type of guy. But you, there comes a point where you're no longer judged on, hey, how many games did you win in September and October? It's, you got a great wide receiver. You have a great running back. You have a great this, a great that. What's the disconnect between how did you go undefeated at home and then get blown out by the Green Bay Packers this past year? And that's the disconnect, I think. And then we have one of the most loyal fan bases. A lot of front runners also, to be fair. But the largest fan base in America.
Both.
And an owner that has always represented himself as kind of a swashbuckling pirate. You know, I'll spare no expense to bring this city a champion again. And you have gone almost 30 years without it. And now you're hearing the rumblings of checkbook is closed. You know, I got to get rid of some guys to sign this guy. It's very un-cowboy-like.
Right.
And it makes me happy, to be
honest. It's un-cowboy-like. It's uncowboy-like according to the reputation that was solidified in the 90s when they signed Dion. But the truth is that they haven't been spenders for quite some time. They just aren't. And there's legitimate questions to ask about why. Oh, salary cap. Yeah.
But everyone's got a salary cap.
The Cowboys just don't spend.
They're going to spend every dollar of the cap, just a matter of how they spend it, because there's a notion out there right now that, oh, well, we can't afford to pay the quarterback, the wide receiver, the second wide receiver, you know, the star linebacker, et cetera. And yet I open my eyes and I go, wait a minute, the Philadelphia Eagles just did it. San Francisco's doing it. The Bengals do it to a certain extent. So you're not playing by different rules. Everyone plays by the same rules. You're just making different choices than other teams are making.
Trust me, there's a mutiny in the fan base right now towards the Cowboys. Hey, speaking of Hall of Fame, do you think Matt Ryan, he's just retired, do you think Matt Ryan is a Hall of Famer? NFL MVP, I mean, a Tom Brady miracle comeback away from being a Super Bowl champion. I don't know. I mean, Eli's a Hall of Famer because he won two. Matt Ryan has the stats, doesn't have the championships. Is Matt Ryan a Hall of Famer?
Not for me, no. And I think we've watered the Hall of Fame down. And I still have this romantic notion of what the Hall of Fame should be, you know, based, you know, being a kid growing up as you, I'm sure, a huge sports fan. Matt Ryan's a really good quarterback. There are other MVPs who are also not in the Hall of Fame. My former radio partner, Boomer Esiason, is one of them, who you could make an argument when he retired, his stats were top 10 in every category. Why isn't he in the Hall of Fame? It's much like Matt lost his only Super Bowl appearance. So there is at least a precedent for him not to get into the Hall of Fame. My gut is that he gets in because we've watered down the Hall of Fame. You know, the Hall of Fame used to mean the very best of the best, period, stop. And while Matt Ryan was a very good quarterback, and this is not a knock on Matt Ryan, this is the reality of at no point in his career would you have ever considered him the best quarterback in football, not a single year, right? So how am I going to take a guy who at no point was ever thought of as the best quarterback amongst his peers and now convince me that he's a Hall of Famer? And I think the Hall of Fame should be a special building. And I think we've watered it down by mandatory minimums as far as how many players get in, not just football, all sports. And I think it, well, it's still special for that guy and the fan base that rooted for that guy, whomever he may be. But the Hall of Fame is not what it used to be. And it doesn't represent what it also used to represent.
So I'm actually with you, and I bet you that our definition of what it takes to be a Hall of Fame quarterback might be similar. I remember I had this debate on ESPN, and what happens in a lot of these debate shows on ESPN, if I'm being honest with everybody, it's not manufactured disagreement. People think that. Or at least it's not supposed to be. I can't speak to every talent, but it's not manufactured disagreement. But there is a lot of semantic games that are played. So like we're arguing in the end over the definition of a word. But I argued one time what it means to be elite, like the difference between elite and great. And I would say, like, I think elite is top, I guess it would be top 10%. So are you, in the NFL, that means, are you a top three quarterback? You know, 32 teams, let's basically put it three quarterbacks. And I would think a Hall of Fame is you need to have an extended stretch of being elite. Like, I don't. Yours is a little strict if you say the best quarterback, and you probably don't mean, like, just one guy. But no. You need to have a five-year stretch where we can look at it and go, oh, you were definitely elite. You were definitely top three. And I think a harder debate than Ryan will be Matt Stafford. Like, Matt Stafford will have the Super Bowl that Ryan didn't have. But I don't know, according to what you just said and what I said together, there was ever a five-year stretch where it's like, oh, Matt Stafford's for sure consistently a top three quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And then that argument then begets the secondary argument, which is, which guy's a compiler, meaning he lasted long enough, was healthy long enough to put up stats that are hard to argue against. Stafford's a great example. Without that Super Bowl, he's got no shot of getting into the Hall of Fame, in my opinion. And yet he's compiled significant stats from a standpoint of yards and touchdowns and all the things that people look at to judge quarterbacks against other quarterbacks. He also didn't win a single playoff game in Detroit, where he spent the majority of his career. Look, you know, and I take Eli Manning. You know, Eli Manning is the guy for us in New York that's the most hotly debated guy when it comes to the Hall of Fame. And one, caveat to that is he's getting into the Hall of Fame. It's a no-brainer. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but not based on regular season. And this is where I get back to the legacy conversation.
Right.
Eli Manning is getting to the Hall of Fame because he was a two-time Super Bowl MVP, period, stop, right? If you look at Eli Manning, the regular season quarterback, it's a ho-hum yawn. He ain't that good. He's certainly not a Hall of Famer. He wasn't a top 10 quarterback. And the word elite is interesting in regards to Eli because I remember the question about Eli Manning. He was asked one summer at a training camp, are you an elite quarterback? And he said, you're damn right I am. And we were like, no, you're not. Like, we've watched you play a lot. And he had these two magical runs. You don't take it away from him. In the biggest moments with the most amount of people watching, and that's enough to get into the Hall of Fame. Now, people will question, well, then why isn't Jim Plunkett in the Hall of Fame? Great question. I don't have an answer for it. But going back to the original premise here, which is I lean towards what you said. 1 year alone cannot get you into the Hall of Fame. If you give me a solid 4, 5, 6 year play with consistency where you're one of the top three or four, even let's say five quarterbacks in the game, I think then you are certainly building a Hall of Fame resume. And I don't think you have to have a championship to win. Like Dan Marino is clearly one of the five greatest quarterbacks, you could argue it, I'm sure, in the history of football. He only went to one Super Bowl. And it was early in his career, and obviously he didn't win it. So no one's going to argue that Dan Marino isn't a Hall of Famer. I just think we're at a place now where the game has changed. The stats by proxy have now changed as well. So quarterbacks are putting up bigger numbers. They are playing a lot longer because the game has now put rules in to protect them from the significant injuries quarterbacks of the 70s and 80s and early 90s suffered, specifically concussions, also injuries to the lower body, preventing hits below the waist against quarterbacks. So I think we do have to evolve a little bit in our thinking. But my gut has always been this. You know, I don't care how old you are, whether you're a 10-year-old boy or a 40-year-old man or older, you know what a Hall of Famer looks like. And a Hall of Famer should be a guy where we all just universally agree, yeah, no doubt, that guy's a Hall of Famer. And Matt Ryan's not one of those guys.
So I want to ask you something, even though you're a Jet fan. I mean, you've done New York media forever, so I think you'll have a perspective on this. This ties into Eli. Like, I rooted against Eli twice a year for well over a decade. And I was Cowboys Giants, and I was never afraid of Eli. I respected Eli. Like, I thought, okay, they'll be fine quarterback play, but I wasn't afraid of Eli. What I'm curious about is, this is going to force you to kind of see things through Giants goggles. But like, how do you feel about Dak? I don't mean like I want Craig Carton, the National Sports Talker's analysis of Dak. I mean like, as you have watched, I mean, the Jets and Cowboys have played a handful of times, but the Giants have to do it twice a year. Like, as a fan of Dak, and I am a fan of the guy and the quarterback, it's a weird thing as well where I actually have confidence in Dak. Like, part of me is like, you should be afraid of Dak. He will destroy your team. It will be him that does it until he doesn't. And then it often is, against really good teams or in the playoffs, he all of a sudden doesn't. But I'm curious from the perspective of like a guy that covers the Giants and they're going, oh, they got to play the Cowboys. Are you afraid of Dak Prescott?
No. Afraid of the Cowboys collectively. They've been better than the Giants a lot over the last 10 years. Dak's what is his eighth year. He doesn't scare me. Dak makes all the throws that NFL quarterbacks gotta make. But Patrick Mahomes scares me, right? If I'm playing against Patrick Mahomes, I'm afraid of Patrick Mahomes. I'm not afraid of Dak Prescott because I know in the biggest of games, he's the guy that's gonna make a mistake. He's the guy who makes every throw. If the pocket is perfect, if a wide receiver is wide open, 100 out of 100 times, he's going to hit him. Period. Stop again. But at no point did Dak Prescott ever put the fear of God into me where I was like, even as a non-Giant fan, but an objective observer who watches every Giant game because of my job, at no point was I like, oh, man, Giants have to see Dak Prescott. Now, was I afraid of other guys? Yeah, 100%. Was I worried about CeeDee Lamb in the last couple of years and prior to that, all the great players that, we talked about earlier? Yes. But Dak Prescott, while I do think he is towards the bottom half of the top 10, maybe even 11th or 12th, worst case scenario, and I think if he were available at the right price, you'd have a dozen teams waiting in line to talk to him, to bring him in because he's better than, half the quarterbacks in the league, but he doesn't make me fear him at all. He's a competent quarterback.
Are you afraid of Micah Parsons?
No. Micah Parsons has become
really
all talk. Yeah. Micah Parsons, I thought, took a major step backwards this year because he fell in love with himself. And there's this new generation of athlete where the microphone in front of your face is more important to them than being the best football player they can be. Micah Parsons could be the best defensive player in all of football, and he was on his way towards that. And then he decided to compare himself to Lawrence Taylor. Silly comparison, of course, with the greatest linebacker of all time. And to me, you've got these young guys who are amazing talents. You have every bit of the skill they need to become Hall of Famers and champions, but they're in love with themselves. They're in love with the sound of their own voice, being on camera, having an Instagram following, doing podcasts, and yap, and talking. The focus has got to be playing. And I'm not saying you're not allowed to have a podcast or have an opinion on world matters and what's going on in the league that you play in. It's all well and good. They have every right to have the podcast like I do, right? But at the end of the day, if you're running to the microphone an hour after an embarrassing loss to the Green Bay Packers, that tells me that that's your focus. And as a fan of the sport, I want you to play football. I want that to be your focus. And unfortunately, Micah Parsons is in a situation now where he wants to be a celebrity, not a football player.
I actually think it's fairly similar to Dak. Like, I think you should be afraid of Micah Parsons, but I also have to acknowledge that in the biggest moments, he hasn't made the play. In the playoff game, he hasn't made the play. He has everything he could, and I don't think the comparison to Lawrence Taylor is crazy. I think he has every ability and has shown that. At moments, I'm like, that's the only guy that reminds me of is Lawrence Taylor, but I need to see it consistently and in the biggest moments.
Let me just say this. It's crazy. I'm not a Giants fan. I'm not even an LT guy. Comparing Micah Parsons to LT is crazy.
He just finished his third year.
Exactly. It's crazy. You're talking about I'm not an LT guy. That might be the craziest thing you've ever said into a microphone.
No, it's not. It's not. And I think history will validate me when this whole thing is done. I actually believe in it. I want to talk about a few other things. Let's do like a freak out meter here. I'm going to start with the less interesting. Well, for the nationwide public, I know you did a segment yesterday where you said nobody cares about the NHL, but let's talk about the NHL and NBA playoffs. Freak out. and this will validate your point. I have nothing to talk about in the NHL playoffs outside of the Dallas Stars. But I actually think it is interesting. It should be interesting wider that here we have a number one seed. They're incredible. The Stars are incredible. Now they're playing a defending champion, Vegas Knights, who've done this thing that is happening in hockey where you could put a guy on long-term injured reserve, then you can beef up your salary, get new players, and then bring the guys back from injured reserve, and there's no salary cap in the playoffs. And I don't want to be the guy that bellyaches about the rules or how you found the loophole in the rules, but, I mean, the Stars are down 0-2, and I'm in full freakout.
Yeah, I mean, you should be, right? Look, I'm not a huge hockey guy. I am aware of that rule. It's been in place for a while. Teams have taken advantage of it to hide guys beyond the roster, and all of a sudden, hey, look who's available for the playoffs, right? So from a purist standpoint, it's not right. I started this thing many, many years ago on the radio in New York, and it's very simple. Nobody cares about hockey, Boomer, when I worked with Boomer Esiason, and that was a way to allow him to say something about hockey. I respect hockey as a sport. I love watching playoff hockey. I don't think I watched 3 minutes of regular season hockey this year. I know the Rangers are up 2-0 against Washington. I'm aware of that. You just told me the Stars are down 0-2. I couldn't have told you that.
You didn't know.
I'm proud to sit down here. Wait. It's funny. I am aware of that rule, though.
You do the Rangers?
I'm not even a hockey fan, but I would be a Ranger fan. My family are Ranger fans, yeah.
NBA, Knicks or Nets?
Oh, diehard Knicks fan. Of the teams I root for, the Knicks have been my favorite team since I'm 5. And they're the one team that if I could pick one of my teams to win a championship first, it would be the New York Knicks.
We'll get to NBA in just a moment. But where'd you grow up? I mean, your accent, obviously you're a native New Yorker, but where'd you grow up?
I grew up about 20 minutes outside of New York City in a place called Westchester County, a little town called New Rochelle.
I know Westchester.
Yeah, the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yeah, I know both.
Yeah. Settled by French Huguenots.
Yeah, so I lived in New York. A little history lesson here. I lived up there for way too long, 15 years. So, I figured you for Long Island, and because you're a Jets guy, and like you, I've always liked the, okay, you are a Jets, Nets, Mets guy. Are you Mets or Yankees?
That's where it gets a little, not to prolong this, it gets a little complicated for me. I grew up as a diehard New York Mets fan, Mookie Wilson, my favorite player of all time. And then in 2009, while the Mets were having a tough season, I opened up a church. And the name of the church was Mets Fans for Yankees. And I adopted the Yankees because they were playing the Phillies in the 09 World Series. And I hate Philadelphia. So I adopted the Yankees because I wanted the Yankees to beat the Phillies in the World Series. And then it just became easier to root for the Yankees. So I'm a fraudulent Yankee fan, as fugazi as it gets. But in the moment, I'm a Yankee fan. What I do every March, I now do like when couples do the gender reveal with the balloon and the powder and all that stuff. I do a fandom reveal every March in which I pick either the Yankees or the Mets. And now for the third consecutive year, I've decided to be a Yankee fan. But my fandom is complete BS.
So a minute ago, I thought you were going to be arrested for polygamy. This is one of my sports rules. You don't get two teams. You just don't. Okay, I'm sorry. But what you've revealed yourself is you have an open marriage with the Mets. You're not with them both at the same time. You just flirt back and forth year to year between the Yankees and the Mets.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
But I've liked the whole like stereotype of Jets, Mets, Nets, Islanders. That's why I was going into this. Is like your blue collar, Long Island, New Jersey, Staten Island guys, and then you know your Manhattan guys, and I think probably your Westchester guys are Giants, Yankees, Knicks, and I recognize that the Knicks and Nets don't fit cleanly because the Nets were overtly New Jersey for so long. Yeah. But you kind of have mixed and matched, Carton. You're kind of picking what you want in there. So I thought you might be an Islanders guy because you're a Jets guy.
Yeah, no, and it's weird. Like when you grow up, so there's New York City, right? the island's on one side, as you know, Westchester's on the other side of it. So there, the Nets did not exist in my 70s and 80s as a kid growing up. The Nets were an irrelevant entity, did not exist, partially because, of course, they were in New Jersey. And the Knicks were just, the dominant team, right? So it's also a generational thing. So the Giants have been around so much longer than the Jets. If you're a New Yorker, an old school New Yorker, for me, if I'm a second generation New Yorker, my dad was born in 1937. He was a Yankee fan. And back in the day, you had choices, right? New York Giants baseball team. Are you a Jackie Robinson, Brooklyn Dodger guy, or a Yankee fan? And then you, by default, were a New York Giants fan, right? The Jets didn't exist throughout the 30s, 40s, 50s, and into the early 60s. I went Jets solely because my dad was a Giants fan. I just wanted to do the opposite of him because I didn't want to root for the same team. And yes, I should probably see a therapist about that. And it was a terrible decision because I had not enjoyed a Super Bowl in my lifetime. But I decided just to combat my father in my fandom. And he wasn't a big basketball guy. He was a baseball guy, more of a football fan than anything. And that's the only reason I picked the Jets as a kid. I was born in 69. So obviously I didn't get to see the Joe Namath New York Jets. My first memory is seeing the Jets play a preseason game against the Redskins, as they were then called, at Shea Stadium where the Mets used to play. But while they were building the Meadowlands in New Jersey. But the Jets was merely to get into fights with my dad about. No other reason.
You're probably a New York sports historian, so you might know the answer to this. What happened to all the baseball New York Giants and Brooklyn Dodger fans? Like, did they become Yankee fans? They don't. No, do they root for the Dodgers in L.A.? Do they root for the Giants in San Francisco?
No. So it's interesting. They didn't go to the Yankees because they were the mortal enemy. And the Yankees were such a dominant franchise when all three franchises existed. A lot of them waited for the Mets to become a team and then immediately joined the Mets because they were by proxy and by default National League fans. And Jackie Robinson had a lot to do with that more than any other individual player, especially in the minority community. It was about Jackie Robinson, which makes a lot of sense. A lot of fans did follow their fandom out to L.A. and became Los Angeles Dodger fans. And then when the Mets came along in the 60s, it was easy to stay National League and then root for this upstart team, the New York Mets. But those National League fans did not go to the Yankees because it was the Yankees that stood in their way of championships. Because you're talking about really good baseball teams back then who couldn't get past the New York Yankees and some of those dominant, Hall of Fame-laden teams.
All right. There's your sports history moment for the New York area. Let's go back to the freakout. Now we'll move to the NBA. All right, you're a big Knicks fan. You're in a good spot right now. Up 2-0 on the Sixers. I'm a Mavericks fan. I don't know what to think right now. We're 1-1 with the Clippers, and I don't know what to think. I mean, Clippers. It's kind of interesting, Craig. I mean, we talked about the super team. There's kind of actually a lot of super teams right now. Like, the Clippers are one of them. I look at them sometimes, I'm like, wait a minute, Harden and Westbrook and Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. But a lot of, the Suns on paper are a super team. So there's a lot of these where you've got three or four superstars. The Mavericks aren't one of them. They got two superstars. But you know, no matter how good you feel about the Knicks or how kind of like weirded out I am of where we are right now with the Mavericks, my biggest complaint about the NBA is it's kind of anticlimactic. Like, I'm probably rooting to get to the semifinals, maybe the conference finals. I think you're rooting to get to the conference finals as a Knicks fan. I don't think either of us are really holding out a rational hope that we're going to win the NBA title, because it's going to be, when it's all said and done, the Nuggets or the Celtics.
Yeah, look, I agree with that. Even though the Celtics did lose last night to the Miami Heat, which was an embarrassing performance by them, giving up 23 three-pointers and making Tyler Hero look like, the second coming of Larry Bird. The Mavericks, the Mavericks obviously are a flawed team like most teams are. And I thought the Clippers did them a major, major favor by bringing Kawhi Leonard back for game two. Like, they ran you out of the building in game one. And as good as Luka is and as great as Kyrie Irving is as a basketball player, there was no answer. They were down like 30, like right out of the gate. And you're like, where are the Dallas Mavericks at, right? And then Kawhi Leonard comes back, hasn't played in 3 weeks. And because he's so good when he's healthy, we got to start feeding him the rock. And that's taking away possessions and shots from the guys that were on the court, who obviously dominated the Mavericks in the first game. Look, I don't care who wins that series. I'm with you. They're not winning an NBA championship. I think if either one of them, whichever one of them gets out of the first round, they have a legitimate chance, you know, to make some noise in the second round, but not good enough, I don't think. I would take the Clippers as a better team over the Mavericks right now. So if the Clippers beat Dallas, I'd give them a better shot in round two than I give the Dallas Mavericks. You know, Luka Doncic plays hero ball. And Tim Hardaway Sr., who's one of my co-hosts during the NBA season, whose son plays for the Mavericks, and he's a Hall of Famer, obviously. It's frustrating for him to watch the Mavericks play because if you watch their half-court offense, it's Luka just yo-yoing a basketball. And then if you can't get a shot, there's like 4 seconds left on the shot clock, and then he passes it. Now it's too late to do anything. The team that bothers me the most out West, though, is the team you mentioned, the Phoenix Suns. So the Phoenix Suns go out there. They get Kevin Durant when Matashiba takes over ownership. Let me make a big splash, show the fans I'm going to spend, and bring them one of the great players of a generation. They acquire Bradley Beal, and you're like, wow, you got three generational scorers on the court together, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, and Kevin Durant, and they stink. They're not a good basketball team.
Yeah.
And the Timberwolves are probably going to sweep them and win the series. And then we could start talking. You're talking about NFL legacy. What's Kevin Durant? Hasn't won a title without Steph Curry. Left there famously. Went to Brooklyn. Never got out of the second round. Forces his way to Phoenix. You could even write last year off because he got there so late. No success last year. They're going to get eliminated in the first round this year. And here's the guy who would be the first to tell you how great he is. And he can't take a team into the conference finals and never has really since his rookie season without Steph Curry. So I think there's a lot of teams out there all playing for second place at West. The East is more interesting because you don't trust Milwaukee. Indiana proved that to you in game two when Dame Lillard did not have the same type of game he had in game one. And you could all of a sudden
without Giannis,
a Nick Pacer second round, Knicks will win that one. And now I know not to be afraid of the Boston Celtics. So if you gave me a Knicks-Celtics matchup and the Celtics played the way they played last night, Knickerbockers in seven, let's go to the NBA Finals.
Oh,
did I sell you on that or not?
What an ingenious. He took the bait. He took the bait on me saying the Mavericks won't win at all and just ran with it. But I also had said the Knicks aren't going to win at all, but he wouldn't take the bait on that. By the way, my takeaway from this is, I wonder if there's some insight into some discontent in the Hardaway family about Luka Doncic. Well, is that all Tim Sr.? Or is that coming from Tim Jr. as well? Which, by the way, Luka is a hero, so he can play hero ball. So I'm fine with that. And he's meshing well with Kyrie. And I know you got to go in a minute, but I can't let you go without saying you're welcome for Jalen Brunson.
By the way, the single greatest acquisition as a free agent in my franchise's history. Remember, we traded for Melo, so that doesn't count. Amari Stoudemire changed things to help us get Melo, you know, 15 years ago. But thank you for not recognizing how good Jalen Brunson can be. And he begged you to stay in Dallas. And I'll tell you what, I guess you're no longer in New York. And it sounds like you don't look forward to coming back all that often. But if you ever want to watch Jalen courtside in a Knick uniform, you just let me know. I'd be happy to bring it to a game.
I do. I'm there every weekend. I'm in New York every weekend. Invitation accepted. Courtside anytime. And by the way, speaking of pounding the ball and holding it until the last second, I think Jalen leads the league. I think he leads the league in like dribbles and holding it the longest in the shot clock. So
I'm going to read.
It's been fun, man. Thank you so much, Carton. Careful. I'm going to accept that invitation. So just be careful. I appreciate you being here on the Will Cain Show, man.
My pleasure. All the best to you and your whole crew. Thanks so much for having me.
There you go. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Craig Carton. And as I mentioned, check him out on the Carton Show, FS1, 7 to 9:30. Every morning. All right, let's get ready for rounds 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. I'll be plugged in all weekend to the NFL draft. Follow me on X at Will Cain or Instagram, see Will Cain. I'll try to live it out loud with you, the NFL draft. I'll see you again on Monday. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcast And Amazon Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.